Hello, and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday, the 2nd of September 2025. My name's Simon, and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen by Amanda Wood and Rosemary Shergold, and read by Janet Proudman and Rosemary Shergold. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Oxtalk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Oxtalk online.
Notice to listeners of Oxtalk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxtalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.
Demonstrations were held in Oxford against the deaths of Palestinian journalists. More than 70 supporters of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign and members of Oxford NUJ, National Union of Journalists, held a vigil. A prominent Al Jazeera correspondent and four of his colleagues were hit by an Israeli strike outside Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. Anna Wagstaff of Oxford NUJ condemned the killings of the journalists as a war crime. She called for those responsible to be held to account and said that they must answer for their crimes before the International Criminal Court. Many of those attending held pictures of the journalists' blue press vests, while others held up pictures of Gazan children dying from malnutrition. UN agencies have now declared that there is a famine in Gaza. Israel denounced the famine declaration as lies, and the military is pressing ahead with preparations to seize Gaza City. Aid groups have warned for months that the war and Israel's restrictions of food into Gaza are causing starvation among civilians. A Baptist minister has been arrested on terror charges for opposing genocide in Gaza. James Grote sat outside New Road Baptist Church in Bond Square, Oxford, protesting Israel's actions in the Palestinian territory, holding a cardboard sign with the words, "I oppose genocide, I support Palestine action." Within 5 minutes, he was arrested by the police on suspicion of a terrorism offence. Palestine Action is recognised as a terrorist organisation by the UK government, and the police will detain anyone expressing support for it. Speaking ahead of his demonstration, Grote said, "I'm taking this action because I oppose the genocide being carried out in Gaza by the Israeli Defence Force and the support it has received and continues to receive from the UK government." He added, "I'm not a member of Palestine Action, but I support its work of disrupting anyone in the UK providing weapons for the war in Gaza." Palestine Action have broken into buildings and caused damage to property, not people. This is not terrorism. The bombing of Gaza to dust is terrorism. So too was the 7th of October massacre by Hamas. The daily slaughter of people in Gaza, including women, children and people queuing for food, which has left 62,000 people dead. This is genocide, and the UK government is complicit in it. A spokesperson for Thames Valley Police said, "Officers have arrested a man in his 60s from Bicester on suspicion of Section 13 of the Terrorism Act 2000. It relates to an incident in which a man was seen to be holding a sign showing support for a proscribed terrorist organisation. Thames Valley Police is carrying out an investigation, and the man arrested remains in custody at this time." Laws came into effect declaring Palestine Action a terrorist group after a group allegedly broke into RAF Brize Norton and spray-painted military jets orange. A spokesman for Defend Our Juries, which is organising the Lift the Ban campaign, said that those defending Palestine Action are clearly not part of a terrorist group. "It aims to stop violence and terrorism being committed against the Palestinian people," he said. "If this unprecedented authoritarian prescription is allowed to stand, there is a clear danger that it will be used against other groups the government of the day does not like, whether that be racial or climate justice groups, disability right groups or trade unions. If enough of us challenge the ban by going to Parliament Square with placards on the 6th of September, we believe we can make it unenforceable." Earlier this month, a demonstration in Parliament Square saw 521 people arrested for displaying placards in support of a proscribed organisation, the Metropolitan Police said.
The next two items report on a demonstration in Oxford against the use of hotels to house migrants from different points of view. Tensions flared as more than 100 protesters clashed and argued about immigration and housing migrants in hotels. On Saturday, August the 25th, set outside Oxford's Holiday Inn Express, which houses migrants, there were about 70 people pro-asylum seekers and around 40 against them. Both sides attempted to drown out one another with debate, shouting, arguments and chants. In the middle, police frequently had to step in to defuse particularly heated arguments between the two groups. Watching from a distance and with the protection of security guards, asylum seekers living in the hotel didn't want to get involved. The protest started out with the arrival of more left-wing demonstrators who all argued that those living in hotels are human beings fleeing conflict and war. Teacher Siobhan Lancaster said at Saturday's protest that there is nothing to fear when it comes to the asylum seekers. She said, "If I was a vulnerable person living at the hotel and a lot of people turned up against me, I'd feel threatened. I want to make clear that this is not Oxford. They're being used as tools by the Tommy Robinsons, Farages, whipping up fear. There is nothing to be scared of. People are trying to get this resolved. How would you feel to flee your own country and to arrive and people say you're not welcome too?" She added, "We should be protecting refugees, not attacking them. These are people who come from the most dreadful circumstances. We have a duty to protect them, and they are good people. They should find out more about the people they're so violently opposed to, talk to them, and you would find common ground." Sarah Jane, meanwhile, has been married to a Muslim for almost 40 years and says she fears the safety of her husband, their children and their grandchildren. "I'd never thought I'd see the day when my husband and children are not considered English. My children have had racial abuse, Islamic abuse. When I married, I took my husband's name, but I have to hide it because I get treated differently." Anne Miller said the anti-immigration side are misdirecting their anger, saying problems such as the cost of living and benefit cuts are not the fault of migrants. On the other side of the debate, many of those we spoke to said that they live close to the hotel and raised concerns about safety, arguing those pro-immigration live elsewhere. More vehicles passing by the demonstration appeared to be in support of those against the asylum seekers than those here in support. "We're not racist, we just don't want them here," Dee Dollymore said. "How can people like us stand up for them when there are rapes and God knows what happening?" Linda Carroll added, I've got two dogs, but I'm scared to bring them out round here because of those living in the hotel. Security are really secretive. They don't want you on the grounds. And these pro-immigration people don't live around here. They don't know what it's really like. And so the second article is migrants living in an Oxford hotel has spoken to their fear and lack of understanding demonstrations against them. The Oxford Mail spoke to some of them living in the Holiday Inn Express near Oxford's Kasama Stadium about life in Oxfordshire and the UK. No figures have been released on how many are living in this hotel, but data published on August 21st by the Home Office reveal that there are 168 people living in the Oxford City Council area. And across Oxfordshire, it's 395 people living in hotels. Most migrants did not want to speak, whether it is because of language barrier or because they didn't want to get involved. During the August 25th protest, about 20 migrants stood outside the hotel with the protection of security, watching the demonstration and noise of the counter-protests outside. We spoke to a man from Afghanistan who came to the UK around a year and 5 months ago. He's been living there all that time, he said. When asked how he felt about those protesting against him, he said, not happy, not happy at all. He said he couldn't understand why they were so against him and his friends living in the hotel. Another person from Syria declined to give his name or have his photo taken because he feared he would become a target. He said he came from Syria to flee conflict and has been living at the hotel for just over a month. I came from the war, he said. I want to work here. I will go to college. I want to learn. One day I want to be a zookeeper or become a police officer. I can't say anything about the protest outside, but I don't understand it. They judge us all for being bad people, but we are not. We just want to live better lives. He added, I came here on a boat, crossing from Calais to Dover. When I arrived, the police took me away and took my phone for 3 days. I was without it all that time, but I understand why they had to do it. Security guarding the hotel outside said there have been incidents where people are coming into the hotel and causing disruption. They say people are welcome to come in and ask questions to the supervisor, but those looking to cause trouble are not welcome. Harry Reid, chief executive of the Oxford charity Asylum Welcome, said, people who claim asylum are legally permitted to have their asylum claims heard, and we are morally obligated to protect people in need. Many have fled unimaginable situations. They're traumatised, scared, and want to rebuild their lives. They're not permitted to work, despite wanting to, and they have no choice over where they live. They don't want to be in a hotel either.
Nigel Farage announced plans to detain and deport thousands of asylum seekers if his party is elected to government at a conference in Oxfordshire. The Reform UK leader, along with senior party member Zia Yusuf, launched the plans called Operation Restoring Justice at Oxford Airport in Kidlington. The party said they would deport up to 600,000 migrants who arrived by small boats in 5 years, increase capacity for detention centres to 24,000, and secure deals with Afghanistan, Eritrea and Iran to return migrants to their countries. They added that they would do this by leaving the European Convention on Human Rights and replace the Human Rights Act with the British Bill of Rights, which would only apply to British citizens and those who have a legal right to work in the UK. Mr. Farage warned that there was a genuine threat to public order if no action was taken on the issue. Oxfordshire councillors across the political spectrum have criticised the plans, with some calling the rhetoric divisive and poisonous, while others say these are empty words and grandstanding. But Councillor Hal Doo, who represents Didcot South and is the only Reform councillor in Oxfordshire, said he thought the leader's proposals were long overdue. I think he spoke clearly and strongly about issues that are genuine, that people care about and that desperately need to be addressed. He added that local councils should do everything in their power to stop hotels from being used to house asylum seekers. Half a dozen protesters from the Oxford branch of Stand Up to Racism stood by the exit of the airport with placards shouting, "Refugees are welcome here." Green Councillor Ian Middleton, who represents Kidlington East on the District and County Council, said, "It's deeply disturbing that Mr Farage was allowed to use Oxford Airport as a platform for this divisive and poisonous rhetoric, especially given its proximity to Campsfield House, which is due to reopen soon. These dog whistles proposals are simply warmed over policies from a failed Conservative government, which ended up costing the UK taxpayer hundreds of millions of pounds while achieving precisely nothing. Oxfordshire is recognised as a county of sanctuary, welcoming people fleeing war, oppression and famine. The recent upsurge in victimisation of innocent asylum seekers who are forced to live in hotels is the result of reprehensible figures like Farage and others, fostering the hatred and public disorder they feed on. It needs to be made clear that Farage and his cronies do not speak for the mass majority of Oxfordshire." Conservative councillor Liam Walker, one of the opposition leaders on the county council, said, "I want to be absolutely clear. I don't support making deals with countries like Afghanistan, as suggested by Reform UK, and therefore doing some sort of deal with the Taliban to facilitate this. For too long, political parties of all colours have been guilty of relying on slogans, headline numbers and bold promises which failed to deliver. This approach has let people down and fuelled frustration. What the country needs is a credible and workable plan to finally get a grip on illegal immigration, not more grandstanding on a stage with a flag, making claims that won't be kept. People want action, not empty words. We've got to start by making it less attractive to get on a dinghy and arrive on our shores." He added that keeping asylum keepers in hotels was not a long-term solution, and that he supported calls for more detention centres to be open, such as Campsfield House in Kidlington. Sir Keir Starmer said he disagreed with Farage's claims that the country was on the precipice of civil disorder over migrants. The Bishop of Oxford has called Nigel Farage deeply disturbing in response to the party leader's immigration policy launch in Kidlington. The Reform UK leader proposes to deport 600,000 asylum seekers in 5 years if the party makes it to power, and to expand the detention centres to accommodate up to 24,000 people. He made the announcement at a conference at Oxford Airport on Tuesday, not far from Campsfield House, a contentious immigration centre which closed in 2018. Stephen Croft, the Bishop of Oxford, has published an open letter in response to Mr Farage's announcement, in which he calls Mr Farage deeply disturbing for seeking to play on the fear of the stranger to stoke division for political advantage. He wrote, "As Bishop of Oxford, I know that Oxford is one of the kindest and most welcoming cities in the country, and one of the greatest cultural crossroads in the world. I'm honoured to be one of the patrons of Asylum Welcome, which offers information, advice and practical support to asylum seekers, refugees and vulnerable migrants living in Oxfordshire. Our city seems a strange choice for the press conference. Perhaps you had in mind that you were near the site of Campsfield House, opposite the airport in Kidlington. Campsfield House was an immigration removal centre operated by Group 4, which closed in 2018. I remember vividly going to visit and meeting those detained in my early years as bishop." He said that while he agrees with something of what was said, Mr Farage published broad brush intentions with insufficient attention to detail. "I disagree profoundly with your attempts to politicise the questions of migration and asylum by deliberately increasing fear of the stranger in our communities," he continued. "Community cohesion and mutual respect are vital aspects in any local community. There are many, many forces which seek to separate good neighbours and sow distrust. We have seen an increase in hate crime in recent months, even in this kindest and most international of cities. To see any politician with a public platform seeking to play on these fears and stoke division for political advantage is deeply disturbing." He added, Oxford's cohesion is built on a complex network of strong relationships between different faith and civic groups. I and my colleagues see and work with similar initiatives in Milton Keynes, Reading, Slough, Banbury, and the other diverse communities which fall within the Diocese of Oxford. We are not helped by politicians who seek to stoke division for their own ends. Concluding the letter, he said, I would be very happy to engage in further conversation on all that this. I hope next time you are able to visit Oxford, it will be possible to meet.
Miriam Margulies has donated £10,000 to charities associated with Gaza and the Edinburgh Fringe. The actress split the money between Medical Aid for Palestinians, MAP, and the Keep It Fringe Fund, part of the Edinburgh Festival Fringe Society. The actress, who grew up in Oxford, starred in several of the Wizarding World's films as Professor Sprout. She has been performing at the Fringe with her show Margulies and Dickens' More Best Bits. In an interview with The National before beginning her run, Margulies spoke about the despair she felt regarding Israel's brutal bombardment of Gaza, as she also condemned the Labour government's complicity in the genocide. She also spoke of her love for the Fringe, but stressed that it was becoming harder for young people to afford it. Margulies said she was extremely passionate about the two charities she had chosen to donate to. She said, The Fringe has given me so much, and this money would go towards helping artists with soaring costs to perform. My head and heart are full of the situation in Gaza, where the need for everything is very great. Medical Aid for Palestine has worked for more than 40 years to uphold the health and dignity of Palestinian communities, working towards a future where all Palestinians have access to an effective, sustainable and locally led healthcare system. Since October 2023, MAP has launched its largest humanitarian response in its history, providing life-saving support, while Gaza's health system remains on the brink of collapse. The charity reached nearly 1 million Palestinians in 2024 alone through partnership with 16 local organisations offering medical aid, clean water, food and dignity kits. MAP has also organised and deployed emergency medical teams to Gaza, bolstering a healthcare system under constant attack. Responding to Margulies' donation, Anne Turnbull, Acting Director of Fundraising and Marketing at MAP, said, On behalf of MAP, my Palestinian colleagues in Gaza, West Bank and Lebanon, and the people they serve, I would like to thank Miriam for her kindness that will provide urgent care where it's needed most. The Edinburgh Festival Fringe Society is the charity which underpins the festival. It was set up in 1958 by a group of artists to provide central services for the festival and to ensure it stays true to its founding purposes of inclusion and welcome to all. The charity supports and encourages those who want to take part in the Fringe, as well as providing information and assistance to audiences and to promote the festival all over the world.
More details have been released on the death at the doctor's surgery. A patient died after becoming unwell during a doctor's appointment at a practice in Oxford, health centre managers said. A group of emergency vehicles came flying in to Mansell Way at around 9:30 on Wednesday morning. These included Thames Valley Police cars, ambulances and a critical care response unit. The Bartlemouth surgery was closed as a result, and a body bag was seen being removed from the premises into an ambulance. Later that day, the police force confirmed an unexplained death. A spokesperson said we're still waiting to be able to get in touch with the next of kin. It's a non-suspicious, unexplained death, and there is no risk to the public. Since then, Buckinghamshire, Oxfordshire and West Berkshire Integrated Care Board has issued a statement on the death, revealing further details. A spokesperson for the care board said, a patient became unwell while attending an appointment at the Bartlemouth GP practice. Sadly, despite the efforts of the practice medical team and ambulance service paramedics, the person died. The practice stayed open, although the waiting room was closed while emergency teams provided care. Access to the building was also affected for some time due to emergency vehicles attending the scene. We are unable to comment any further at this time. People were quick to leave tributes in response to the death of the individual who has not been identified at this stage. Among those leaving tributes was Sam Collis, who said, "Truly awful, God bless them, rest in peace." The incident brought up bad memories of other unconnected incidents in Mansell Way, which shocked the community. This including a stabbing with a Rambo knife outside Oxford Central Mosque off Mansell Way on March 13, 2024. Hassan Hussein from Nyebevan Close was sentenced at Oxford Crown Court in April and was jailed for 14 years. The mosque was also targeted in an alleged hate crime on Tuesday, August the 19th, when a man allegedly stuck pork and an Israeli flag on the door of the building. Commenting on Wednesday, a 22-year-old former Bristol University student said that crime seemed to be rising in the area. She's lived in Oxford since she was born. She said, "Being from Oxford, this is not something you're really used to. When I grew up, I never heard something like this. I'm very shocked." Green City Councillor Dr. Alex Powell said, "East Oxford residents will understandably be concerned to have seen such a large emergency presence outside Oxford Health Centre today, particularly given the context of other recent incidents." A GP surgery was closed to patients after a body bag was seen in incredibly distressing scenes outside an East Oxford Health Centre. Emergency services were called to Mansell Way off Cowley Road during the incident. The response including police cars, ambulances and a critical care response unit. The Oxford Mail understands the incident relates to an unexpected, unsuspicious death, but the authorities believe there is no wider risk to the public. The Bartlemouth surgery, part of the health centre, was closed and a body bag was seen being removed from the premises into an ambulance. The incident has caused shock among the community. A 25-year-old eyewitness, who asked not to be named, said he saw the police come flying in and there were at least seven vehicles. He added, "It's really unsettling. There's always a police presence around here, but not like this. All I know is that a person has collapsed and police were rushing in with life-saving equipment." Oxfordshire County Councillor Emily Carr called the incident incredibly distressing. However, the deputy leader of the county's Greens said, "We are very lucky in Oxford to have such a responsive police force and emergency services that do their best in these situations." Green Councillor Dr. Alex Powell, whose City Council ward of St Clements includes the health centre, said now was not the time for speculation. He said, "East Oxford residents will understandably be concerned to have seen such a large emergency presence outside of Oxford Health Centre today, particularly given the context of other recent incidents. These incidents include violent crimes such as a stabbing outside the Oxford Central Mosque, for which a 25-year-old was jailed for 14 years. I encourage residents to engage with and follow any directions from Thames Valley Police and the ambulance service," Dr. Powell added. Local woman Sarah, who did not disclose her surname, saw the vehicles arrive when she walked past the health centre for her Zumba class. They were still there when she returned. "I love living in this area," she said. "I'm very saddened that something has happened." Sabine Dortschak, 58, travelled to Bartlemouth surgery to make a doctor's appointment. She said she was shocked and that she was praying for them. One local man who did not wish to be named said, "There was a person on the floor with curtains around them, that's all I know." Greg, 28, who did not disclose his surname, said that although he was really worried about the incident, did not make him feel unsafe. The NHS has been contacted for comment on the incident.
The amount of debt amassed by Oxford City Council has risen by almost £70 million in the space of the year. The City Council's debt increased by just under a third to almost £290 million. This amounts to almost £1,750 worth of debt per person, an increase of just over £423 from last year. It's also the highest increase in debt in the county, with Oxfordshire County Council's debt falling 8.8% and Charwell District's by 4.4%. The council said that the increase in borrowing is planned and is part of its investment in new and existing social housing. They are the only council in Oxfordshire who manage and own its own social housing. A spokesman said, as part of a government policy change some years ago, the council was required to take on a significant amount of debt in return for keeping all its rental income. Unlike neighbouring district councils, we continue to own and manage housing stock rather than having it transferred to a housing association. Councillor Ed Turner, Cabinet Member for Finance and Asset Management, said, Oxford City Council's borrowing is planned and responsible, allowing us to invest in council housing and build new homes for our residents. This is the main reason Oxford's borrowing has increased, while other councils without housing responsibilities are seeing their debt levels fall. This means that our debt is higher, but so too is our income as we receive property rents, and it requires ongoing investment, but we only borrow where there is a secure income stream. We believe councils should be properly funded to meet their duties, and we would welcome greater government support to help us deliver for our communities. Surrey County Council had the largest increase in debt in the last year at £346 million, while the bankrupt Birmingham City Council had the largest overall debt at £3.3 billion.
A body has been found in a disused quarry after a frantic bank holiday search. Emergency services rushed to Old Kiln Lakes in Chinner, a former chalk pit quarry now filled with water. Thames Valley Police confirmed that the body of a male was found. His death is being treated as unexplained but not suspicious. A spokesperson for the force said, at around 6:30 p.m. on August 25th, we were called to an incident at Chinner Quarry. Sadly, the body of a male was found. His family have been informed and are being supported by specially trained officers. Our thoughts are with them at this extremely difficult time. The death is being treated as unexplained but not suspicious, and a file is being prepared for the coroner. Thames Valley Police declined to say if the victim was an adult or a child. The National Police Air Service also confirmed that a police helicopter crew was dispatched at the same time and remained in the air for nearly an hour to conduct a search of the area. The crew was dispatched from NPAS Benson to deal with a concern for safety in Chinner, the organisation said, adding that the total flight time was 55 minutes. Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service also confirmed that they were in attendance at the emergency incident, but declined to provide more information and referred inquiries to Thames Valley Police. Reports have said a group of people were using the water recreationally during the good weather on the bank holiday. The site, with steep banks dropping off into deep water, has been subject to warnings by the landowner and police following previous incidents of people jumping into the water. In 2020, police warned the water is highly toxic and can cause serious health issues due to its high alkaline content, and told members of the public to stay away. Following the warning, owners deployed security guards to patrol the site and added black colouring as a deterrent after an influx of visitors. Because of its previous bright turquoise hue, the lakes were known locally as the Blue Lagoon. The area, which has been owned by housing developers Taylor Wimpey since 2010, featured in James Bond movie Die Another Day, starring Pierce Brosnan. A small part of it is publicly accessible as a nature reserve, but others are fenced off with warning signs. It's not the first time that quarry diving at the site has been an issue, with a serious warning issued after more than 100 youngsters were filmed leaping 40 foot into the water in 2009. And at a quarry in Stratton Audley, a Bicester schoolboy, Noel Vidler, aged 15, died after he jumped into the water with friends in 1966. couple from Oxfordshire have been named as two of those who were killed in a tragic helicopter crash on the Isle of Wight. Horse riding instructor Justin Yukovzoska, 52, and lorry driver Wojtek Kowalkowski, 49, a couple from Bloxham near Banbury, have been named in national reports as two of those killed in the bank holiday crash. Miss Zoska's daughter, Julia Buzar, posted a tribute to the best mum you could ask for, adding, "The world took her too soon." Hampshire police confirmed three people had died following the incident, which happened on Monday, August the 25th at about 9:30 a.m. A fourth person currently remains in hospital in a serious condition. A multi-agency response was deployed when the helicopter came down at 9:24 a.m. close to the seaside town of Shanklin in a field near the A3020 Shanklin Road on the Isle of Wight. The helicopter was being used for a private flying lesson, which the Daily Mail reported was the Bloxham couple's reason for travelling to the island. A GoFundMe raiser has been launched by the partner of Julia Buzar, Mrs. Zoska's daughter. She wrote for the fundraiser, "This sudden and devastating event has left us all heartbroken and struggling to cope with the loss. We are now trying to bring them both back to Poland, where they can be laid to rest with their families in the place they called home. The cost of repatriation, funeral arrangements and travel is more than we can manage alone, and we are asking for support during this incredibly different time." Julia Buzar wrote in her tribute, "I have no words. The world took my mum too soon. She was the best mum you could ask for, loved by everyone. I never thought I'd be writing something like this. Please, if anyone could help bring them back to Poland so they can be with their families, it would mean the world to me. Rest in peace, Mum and Wojtek." A statement was also released by Turpin's Lodge Riding School in Hook Norton, where Mrs. Zoska worked as an instructor. A spokesperson said, "Many of you will have been coached, met and been friends with our lovely Justinia. Justinia's lessons were always filled with smiles, fun and happiness. Tragically, Justinia and her partner were involved in a fatal helicopter crash on the Isle of Wight. Our thoughts go out to Justinia's daughter's family and friends at this awful time. Justinia was a wonderful coach, horsewoman and a lovely lady. The aircraft was carrying four people, including the pilot, when it came down in a field," the operator, Northumbria Helicopters, said. The company confirmed its aircraft, GJAS D-OCLV, which is listed as a Robinson R-44-2 helicopter, was involved in the incident.
Memory Lane. Remembering Oxford Police Force's first tragedy. Oxford's police force suffered its first tragedy just a month after it was formed. PC Joseph Gilkes, 22, drowned after being abused, attacked and chased by an angry mob in St. Ebbs on February the 4th, 1869. He saw a crowd obstructing the path outside a butcher's shop in Blackfriars Road as they queued for cheap cuts of meat. He ordered them to move and gave one of the 60-strong crowd, Kezia Cox, a gentle shove. She slipped and fell, but got up and hit the officer. Then her husband John joined in and battered him to the ground. Mrs. Cox then hit him with a broken plate. After shouts of "Give it him, he deserves it," the officer, knowing he was in trouble, fled and jumped into the Thames to escape the howling crowd. The fast-flowing river carried him away, and his body was later recovered. Mr. and Mrs. Cox were arrested and appeared at an inquest the following day. Several witnesses gave evidence, including P.C. Francis Wilkes, who was with P.C. Gilkes that day, but played no part in defending his colleague. The coroner commented, "It is most extraordinary that the witness Wilkes should stand by and see a brother constable injured in the way he has done, to say nothing of his duty as an Englishman to help a fellow man from being attacked." Wilkes attempted to justify himself by saying that 70 people were at the scene, and if he had interfered, he might have been attacked as well as his colleague. Although P.C. Gilkes had 2 wounds on the back of his head and his scalp had not been fractured, and death was said to be due to drowning, the coroner said he did not think there was sufficient evidence to justify a verdict of manslaughter, and the jury agreed. Mr. and Mrs. Cox were charged with savagely assaulting P.C. Gilkes and appeared in the city quarter sessions in April. The recorder cleared John Cox and jailed his wife for a week. During the hearing, P.C. Wilkes was pointedly asked why he had not assisted his colleague during the fracas. He replied lamely, "Because I thought I was not required." An entry in the police occurrence book covering the event noted that P.C. Wilkes had returned to his lodgings in St. Ebbs after he had seen his colleague run off. Not surprisingly, he resigned from the force. Unlike other forces, because of the university's historic role in policing, the Oxford force had to set up under a special act of Parliament. It became operational on January the 1st, 1869, but there had not been time to equip the 20 to 30 officers with the uniforms. Their only identification was an armlet on the sleeves of their coats. The case was widely reported in newspapers. Although both officers were off duty and in civilian clothes, there was no doubt that P.C. Gilkes identified himself to the crowd as a police officer, and it was possible that he was wearing his on-duty armlet. The question remains, was P.C. Gilkes killed while he was on duty? John Chipperfield concluded this article with many thanks to retired police officer Bill Butcher for supplying this story.
The newborn care unit at the John Radcliffe Hospital in Oxford has been rated among the UK's best for premature baby care. The unit received an outstanding rating in 6 out of 8 categories in the latest National Neonatal Audit Programme. Amit Gupta, clinical lead for the Neonatal Intensive Care Unit, part of the Oxford Newborn Care Unit, said, "The Oxford Newborn Care Unit is proud of its record of providing high quality care. It reflects our team's hard work and persistent focus on doing the very best for our babies and families. The National Neonatal Audit Programme evaluates neonatal care across the UK, and this year's audit reviewed data from around 58,000 babies treated in 198 hospitals. 4 of the unit's outstanding ratings were in areas focused on the critical period around birth for premature babies. These included the antenatal administration of magnesium sulfate to mothers to protect babies' brains, as well as delayed umbilical cord clamping for at least 1 minute after birth, which has been shown to reduce mortality by a third. The 2 other outstanding ratings were for maintaining a normal body temperature on admission to the neonatal unit and providing maternal milk within the first 2 days of life, which supports improved immune responses and supports mother and baby bonding. Timely and coordinated care immediately after the birth can significantly reduce the risk of complications and death." The unit was also recognised for timely screening for retinopathy of prematurity, a potentially blinding eye condition that requires early detection, and the use of non-invasive ventilation in the first week of life, which reduces the risk of chronic lung disease. Dr. Aleri Adams, consultant neonatologist, National Neonatal Audit Programme lead at Oxford University Hospital, said, "These outcomes are a testament to the dedication and teamwork of our staff. From midwives and obstetricians to neonatal nurses and doctors, everyone plays a part in delivering safe, evidence-based care to our most vulnerable patients." The Trust said the achievements reflect the close collaboration between maternity and neonatal teams, ensuring best practice interventions are delivered consistently and effectively. Yvonne Christley, Chief Nursing Officer at Oxford University Hospitals, added, "This is a fantastic achievement and a reflection of the professionalism, compassion and commitment shown by our neonatal and maternity teams. Families can be confident that their babies are receiving the very best care from the moment they arrive. Oxford University Hospitals employs more than 12,000 staff and consists of four hospitals: the Churchill Hospital, the John Radcliffe Hospital, the Nuffield Orthopaedic Centre in Oxford, and the Horton General Hospital in Banbury. Where is the best burger in Oxfordshire? Readers had their say after we asked where the best place is to get two or beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun. Dylan Driscoll said, "Big Society on Cowley Road. Their sauce is unlike anything I've ever had." Reader Matt Chilton said, "Table Fresh at the Crown Chalgrove is the best burger in Oxfordshire." Jerry Patterson added, "Genuine Brett's Burgers are now available at the Fox Inn on Boar's Hill." Lee Morris said Jeremy Clarkson's Astral Pub, the Farmer's Dog, is the best he'd ever had. Phil Webb said, "The Town Arms, the Rickety Press and Craft Burger Oxford are all fantastic. The Beefy Boys are exceptional." In fact, the Beefy Boys are to open their first Oxfordshire restaurant at the Westgate next month with a soft launch. Jay Fawn agreed with Phil, "When the Beefy Boys opens, I'll 100% be there." And Darren King said, "The Town Arms are great. Django's Smokehouse do a great burger. Seven Bone Burger Co. are pretty awesome too." Another suggested Molly's in Farringdon, which recently won the Blogger's Choice at the National Burgers Awards. No readers mentioned McDonald's.
A new walkway on Oxford's Botley Road, which will provide more space for pedestrians and cyclists, is set to open. Network Rail closed the road at the rail bridge in April 2023 as part of a major scheme to revitalise the station. The project includes replacing the rail bridge with better access provided for pedestrians and cyclists, creating a new western entrance to the station and building a new platform to improve east-west rail links. The scheme has been hit by repeated delays and the Botley Road is not due to reopen until August next year. However, the pledge to complete a new walkway helping people to get past the bridgeworks into Frideswyde Square will be completed soon, Network Rail bosses are promising. In the latest update, issued on the 22nd of August, a Network Rail spokesperson told the newspaper, "Work is currently finalising on the creation of the new northern walkway on Botley Road. Since the programme was reset in January 2025, the project is delivering to the new schedule, with the walkway due to open by the end of August, greatly improving access for all, and Botley Road reopening by the end of August 2026. The new walkway, which links Botley Road to Frideswyde Square, will offer a significant improvement over the existing access, and at 4 metres wide, it provides much more space for pedestrians and cyclists. Once the walkway opens, cyclists will be asked to dismount while using the shared surface until next year to allow for the safety of pedestrians while work continues in the area. Our work is vital to creating a bigger, better station for everyone, providing more services with East-West Rail, adding rail capacity for the future, and an improved and safer road layout. The cost of the project has increased due to the delays, and the £161 million total cost has now increased to about £230 million, according to Rail Minister Peter Hendy. The pathway leading from Botley Road to Frideswyde Square has been reconfigured on numerous occasions to accommodate the ongoing work. The route has become known among local residents as the Tunnel of Doom. Traders in the square have complained to the ongoing roadworks, and this has led to a reduction in footfall. Work in the Botley Road area has led to buses being diverted into Abbey Road, Cripley Road and Cripley Place so they can turn round. For a short time after a water main burst, the buses were switched to the Oseney Mead Industrial Estate, but subsequently returned to the Abbey Road area, where residents, including campaigner Julian LeVay, claim they face several hundred bus movements in the neighbourhood every day. He has campaigned to hold Network Rail to account for their failings relative to the scheme and wrote a booklet documenting the losses of local businesses and recording the experience of local residents.
Just over a month since Thames Water introduced a hosepipe ban in parts of Oxfordshire, the company has thanked its customers for helping to save millions of litres of water. The ban, which came into force on July the 22nd, applies to an area including Swindon, Gloucestershire, Berkshire and Wiltshire. Thames Water said the restrictions have resulted in daily savings of more than 5 million litres of water. Neil Muncaster, Strategic Water Resources Director at Thames Water, said, "I want to thank customers for helping to save water across their homes and gardens since we implemented the temporary use ban. These welcome reductions have really supported our efforts to maintain stable reservoir levels throughout this hot, dry summer. We're also doing our part to help protect supplies, finding and fixing over 1,450 leaks and installing over 34,000 smart meters in the Thames Valley since the start of June. While there have been spells of wet weather, so far in August we have received just 3% of the long-term average rainfall for the month, which is continuing to the overall strain on water resources across the region." The company said more rainfall is needed to replenish water supplies and ease pressure on the network. Mr. Muncaster said, "We still need prolonged and significant rainfall to replenish supplies, and based on current forecasts, we anticipate the hosepipe ban will remain in place as we continue to monitor reservoir levels. It's important to remember every drop of water we use comes from the environment. Reducing water use helps to protect the health of the local waterways and wildlife. Warmer weather causes soil to dry and contract, and this can cause leaks or bursts, particularly in heavy clay areas like the southeast. Since the ban began, Thames Water has repaired more than 600 leaks in the affected areas and has installed 34,000 smart meters across the Thames Valley since the start of June. The National Drought Group has classified the current water situation in England as a nationally significant incident. This summer's July was the fifth warmest in the UK since records began in 1884. There have been four heat waves this summer and the warm, dry weather is expected to continue, with the country having already experienced five consecutive months of below average rainfall. Soil moisture levels at the end of July were drier than normal for the time of year, and groundwater levels remain notably low in areas impacted by the ban. River flows and reservoir storage also remained below average at the end of July in both London and at Farmore. If you are looking for recycling solutions, a recycling service is available for residents in Oxford. Free curbside collections can be booked online with Oxford Direct Services or Oxford City Council. Proceeds go to Thames Valley Air Ambulance. There is also a collection point at Rose Hill Community Centre, Carroll's Way, OX4 4HF. All items must be bagged. Clothing, including coats, shoes and boots, including wellies, handbags and soft fabric bags, blanket sheets and throws, duvets and duvet covers, pillows and pillowcases, sleeping bags, curtains, cushions, table linen and towels are accepted. Not nappies, work clothes or dust sheets. For carpets, search online for Waste Wizard at oxfordshire.gov.uk.
City Cinema nominated for Independent Film Award. An independent cinema in Oxford has been nominated for a national award. The UPP, the Ultimate Picture Palace, in June Street off Cowley Road, dates back to 1911 with its Art Deco building intact, including the original box office window. In 2022, it celebrated becoming a community-owned business after a campaign in which more than 1,200 local investors bought shares. Now, the UPP is in running for the British Independent Film Awards inaugural Cinema of the Year Award. And the cinema is calling on its patrons and local community to vote for them to ensure they secure a nomination. Michaela Tuckwell, Executive Director at the Ultimate Picture Palace, said, "What makes the UPP unique is that it belongs to the people of Oxford and has welcomed generations of film lovers. As one of only a handful of pre-First World War cinemas still operating and the only one in the country that is community-owned, we're proud that our 1,200 local shareholders safeguard its future. Being shortlisted for Cinema of the Year is a chance for Oxford film lovers to show how much this place means to them." Baron Neil Mendoza worked to block UPP from being declared an asset of community value, a status that grants protection from development. He's a member of the House of Lords and is both the chair of Historic England, a government body in charge of granting listed status in the country, and provost of Oriel College, which bought the cinema 5 years ago. A recent successful campaign to have the century-old cinema protected was challenged by the college, which said it would have a chilling effect. The Oxford Times has further claimed that the college, which has an endowment close to £100 million, is eyeing up the property for future development. Reportedly related to this, the 1,200-strong community group has said that Oriel has aggressively sought a reduction in the lease, which runs to 2037. But the cinema's status as an ACV has now been secured, adding to its designation as a Grade II listed asset. The UPP will look to add the BFIA nomination to this, with voting open and running until Monday, September the 22nd. Then, a jury will select 5 nominees and announce them on Monday, November the 3rd, with cinema goers able to vote to decide the winner until Monday, November the 24th. The victor will be revealed at the BIFA's ceremonial on Sunday, November the 30th. BIFA directors Amy Gustin and Dina Wallace said, "Cinemas are vital spaces for film discovery, access and community, and we're delighted to be able to celebrate them with this new award."
A pioneering Oxford team who created life-saving equipment to keep donor organs functioning outside the body for longer have seen their company snapped up for $1.5 billion. OrganOx, which specialises in advanced technology for kidney and liver transplantation, is set to be acquired by Tokyo-based medical technology giant Terumo Corporation. The company, which emerged from Oxford University, specialises in devices that keep donor organs functioning outside the body for significantly longer than traditional methods. The deal, which is subject to regulatory and other approvals, would be the largest acquisition of an Oxford University spin-out to date and one of the most significant venture capital exits in UK university spin-out history. Professor Konstantin Kousios, co-founder of OrganOx and director of Oxford University's Institute of Biomedical Engineering, said, "This technology was born from a deep collaboration between engineering and clinical science within the Institute of Biomedical Engineering, uniquely enabled by Oxford's unparalleled cross-disciplinary innovation ecosystem. From the outset, our aim was to solve one of transplantation's greatest challenges, preserving organs in a viable state for longer, so as to make it possible to assess and potentially transplant what was previously thought untransplantable. Seeing that vision realised for the benefit of patients across 4 continents has been incredibly rewarding. And this acquisition will further enhance the global reach and impact of Oxford's innovative science." Founded in 2008 by Professor Kousios and transplant surgeon Professor Peter Friend, OrganOx emerged from a collaboration between Oxford Institute of Biomedical Engineering and the Nuffield Department of Surgical Sciences. Using a technique known as normothermic machine perfusion, the company's devices circulate warm, oxygenated fluid through the organ, replicating conditions inside the human body. This approach enables real-time assessment of organ viability and has increased the number of organs suitable for transplant. Professor Friend said, "As a clinician, I've seen firsthand the limitations of traditional organ preservation. OrganOx technology is transforming the landscape of organ transplantation with huge impact on both patients and surgeons." A man has been bitten by the UK's most dangerous spider while sleeping in his bed in Oxfordshire. Little did he know at the time, he was joined under the covers by a false widow spider, which has been described by experts as the most dangerous spider in Britain. The 64-year-old felt a sharp pain in his side when turning over in bed and made the shocking discovery. "I felt something on my leg in bed, which I brushed away before I rolled over, and felt something hard on my side. It felt like a large crumb. I picked it up, put it on the bedside table and got a torch, finding out it was a wriggling spider. Not only did I find out that it had bitten me and was starting to spin, it's the first time a spider has bitten me. Fast forward almost 2 weeks and the rash is still visible but diminishing, thankfully for David, who has warned others living in the area. Just to let everyone in Yarnton know, for your family's safety, including children, to be aware of and check ceilings, the rash is still itchy and 13 centimetres long. It was certainly worse than a wasp, which only lasts a day with me. I'm using Piriton and a hydrocortisone cream. The spider is about as big as a fingernail and certainly not as big as a house spider. I didn't seek medical attention because unfortunately it can be difficult to get an appointment locally. However, we're fortunate to have a reliable pharmacist opposite where we live who recommended hydrocortisone cream to help with the itching, which provided some relief. The former NHS renal technician was unfazed by the false widow encounter, having never had a phobia of spiders like many do in the UK. "I wasn't overly concerned, thinking that the symptoms would subside more quickly," said David. "I'm not particularly afraid of spiders. I often pick them up to move outdoors if I find one indoors." Oxford University zoologist Clive Hambler recently said the false widow is widely regarded as the most dangerous spider breeding in Britain. "They are not native to Britain, though, and are believed to have come here in banana boxes from the Canary Islands in the 1800s. Dr. Tom Elwood, an arachnologist, said, "August is when male spiders become active. They're searching for a mate, and they'll wander through open windows, up walls, into bathrooms, anywhere they can. The noble false widow is the largest of the three, with females growing up to 40 millimetres in body length, 10 millimetres for males. This spider species has dark brown legs and the front section of its body, while the abdomen can vary with patterns of cream and dark brown marks, sometimes described as skull-shaped."
A new study has revealed what may be the earliest evidence of victory celebrations in European prehistory. The research, led by the School of Archaeology for the University of Oxford, focused on Neolithic mass graves in Alsace, northeastern France. It suggests that violence during this period was not just a result of conflict, but may have formed part of ritualised political displays. The study, co-authored by Dr. Teresa Fernandez-Crispo and Professor Rick Schulting, used multi-isotope analysis to examine the remains of individuals buried in mass graves dating to between 4,300 and 4,150 BCE. The findings challenge long-held assumptions that prehistoric violence was indiscriminate or purely pragmatic. Excavations at the Arkenheim and Bergheim sites uncovered complete skeletons showing signs of extreme violence, as well as pits filled with severed left upper limbs. The researchers say the treatment of the bodies, marked by overkill and the removal of trophy body parts, suggests they were part of a structured post-conflict ritual. Professor Schulting of Oxford School of Archaeology said, "These findings speak to a deeply embedded social practice, one that used violence not just as warfare, but as spectacle, memory, and assertion of dominance." Analysis of the victims' bones and teeth revealed many of them were likely outsiders with different diets, higher mobility, and evidence of greater physiological stress compared to individuals given standard burials. However, the severed limbs appeared to belong to local individuals, while the tortured individuals and full skeletons were likely from more distant areas. This distinction supports the idea of a two-tiered ritual. Local enemies were killed in battle, dismembered, and returned as trophies, while outsiders were executed in violent ceremonies meant to reinforce social unity. The researchers say by revealing the complex social and cultural roles violence played in the Neolithic period, the study adds a new chapter to the human story, one in which the echoes of war and ritual continue to shape our understanding of early society.
Visitors can enjoy free entry to National Trust sites in Oxfordshire and the neighbouring counties in September with Heritage Open Days. Historical places owned and maintained by the National Trust, including Grays Court and Chastleton House in Oxfordshire, will be open to the public for free for one day only. The scheme is England's largest festival celebrating history and culture. Heritage Open Days takes place between September the 12th and 21st. Normally, National Trust places charge an on-the-door admission fee generally between £12 and £18, or they offer free admission for those with a membership, which costs £96 annually for an adult, 26 and over, £48 for a young person, 18 to 25, or £12 for a child.
The final batch of Queen Elizabeth II's £1 coins are entering circulation in a pivotal moment in UK coinage history. They are the last ones to bear her portrait, as more than 23 million are released alongside 7.5 million new King Charles III coins. "We're witnessing the physical representation of our monarch's transition," said Rebecca Morgan, director of commemorative coin at the Royal Mint. The last of the Queen's coins, dated 2022, are the rarest £1 coins in active circulation, she added.
A Second World War veteran who served with the Royal Air Force has celebrated his 100th birthday. Dennis Bishop of Whitney was a ground radio operator during World War II, spending time in France, Belgium, Germany and Africa. Only 14 when the conflict began, he was 20 when Japan signed the surrender document on the 2nd of September 1945, ending the war which had caused the death of up to 85 million people worldwide. Mr. Bishop survived the destruction and on August the 22nd celebrated his 100th birthday at Whitney's Corn Exchange. Alongside friends and family, he received a card from the station commander and commander of nearby RAF Bryce Norton, delivered by personnel from the county's largest airbase. In addition, RAF chef Corporal Bowers baked him a special cake. "Dennis is central to our community," said Mayor of Whitney, Andrew Bailey. "He's often seen here at the Corn Exchange, playing the piano and meeting people. He was called to our VE and VJ Day celebrations recently, and hearing him talking about his memories of the Second World War and post-war years shows his wealth of knowledge. He has such a passion for the RAF and his time serving, so it was a real privilege to be here with him to celebrate such a significant milestone with all his friends, family and RAF," Bryce Norton. An Oxford MP is calling for an eyesore derelict pub to be knocked down so that work on getting the area cleaned up can begin. Templar Square Shopping Centre in the Cowley area first opened its doors on May the 11th, 1965, and a celebration took place on Saturday, May the 10th, to mark the milestone. Real estate investment manager and developer Redevco is planning to turn the centre into a mixed urban scheme after it bought it for £38.8 million in March 2022. Redevco held a public consultation in late 2022, in which 9,000 people were invited to take part in. But in recent months, politicians have called on developers to speed up their plans to revamp the facility, with fears it could be left to continue on a downward spiral. This week, Annalise Dodds, MP for Oxford East, called for a derelict nearby pub to be demolished immediately. The Nelson, which is in between Towns Road, had been serving customers since the early 1960s when it moved to allow the Templar Square shopping centre to be built. In 2014, the pub closed its doors following incidents involving violence and drug use. Miss Dodds said, "I know residents are concerned about the future of Templar Square. I'm pushing for the derelict Nelson pub to be knocked down immediately so we can start getting the area cleaned up." Templar Square has been hit by a spate of antisocial behaviour in recent years, including a large police presence being called to Templar Square in mid-March after reports of groups of youths having organised fights. In December 2024, there were 189 crimes recorded by the Oxford Cowley Neighbourhood Policing Team, with the majority taking place near Templar Square. While Miss Dodds said the pub is not a hub for antisocial behaviour anymore because it's cordoned off, it's still an eyesore. She has met with Redevco and Oxford City Council about the site and said she will continue calling for the Nelson pub to be demolished and for the area to be smartened up to give residents the public space they deserve. But City Councillor for Temple Cowley, Sarge Malik, said demolishing the pub will not achieve anything and is calling for the shopping centre revamp to begin. "What the public want is redevelopment of the whole Cowley Centre," he said. "The people of Cowley want the post office back and a thriving shopping centre. I'm calling to the council to work with local elected councillors to revamp the shopping centre and very much needed housing."
Screen legend Sir Michael Caine's former Oxfordshire home is a cinematic masterpiece that is almost as captivating as the man himself, and, as one would expect, comes with its very own movie theatre, perfect for watching classics like Alfie, Get Carter or The Italian Job. There are certain moments in life that etch themselves into our memories, and for many, the discovery of a dream home is one such experience. Sir Michael Caine perfectly captures this sentiment in his autobiography, recounting the moment he and his wife first laid eyes on a Grade II listed 17th century property that would become their home for 15 years. "As we drove up through the gates marked Rectory Farmhouse, Shakira leaned over to me and whispered, 'We've got to have it.' 'We haven't even bloody seen it,' I grumbled, but deep down I should have known better. We bought it on the spot." Now, Rectory House Farm on the Thames at North Stoke near Wallingford, with a staggering 200 yards of river frontage, is on the market. This quintessentially English country estate with much architectural interest affords its future custodian a true Swallows and Amazons lifestyle. Marrying period charm with the convenience of a 21st century living, Rectory Farmhouse is a perfect country retreat for those seeking a private edge-of-village estate, hidden from view, which also provides the opportunity to entertain on a grand scale. During his time at Rectory Farmhouse, Sir Michael Caine, whose illustrious career has spanned over six decades, made significant upgrades to the property. He renovated the original 17th century gabled house and added a modern extension. The 20th century addition features a vaulted galleried living dining room known as the Long Room, a games room, a library and an indoor swimming pool with part timbered frame and part glazed roof, a spa and a sauna. He also planted many of the specimen trees to be found in the garden today. The house sits in the centre of its plot, surrounded by 8.3 acres of gardens and grounds. Waterways and lakes are woven through, crisscrossed by wooden bridges, and the River Thames meanders along its boundary. York stone terraces span the westerly aspects of the house and are accessed by double doors from both the long room and the swimming pool. One of the terraces has a gazebo housing a substantial outside kitchen. A formal garden includes a beautiful circular fountain, mature herbaceous beds bordered by formal hedging and mellowed old brick paths. There is a tennis court and pavilion. Rectory Farmhouse, Church Lane, North Stoke, Wallingford, is being sold through Savills Estate Agents and has a guide price of £10 million.
Heroes put out a deliberate fire near some allotments that could have spread and caused a disaster. Jane Jones was out for a walk on Sunday, August the 24th, when she noticed a fire in a field near Carterton Football Club and the allotments. She phoned 999, and with the help of Carterton residents Peter Brown, Alex and Jemima Norris, Juliet Cox and her children, they all rushed to get watering cans to stop the fire from spreading. Jane said, "Thankfully, due to a good water supply at the allotment, we managed to control the fire and thus potentially saving the football club and nearby houses. It could have been a lot worse due to the dry conditions we are experiencing. The firemen thanked us all for our efforts and said we had made their job a lot easier. The fire brigade had trouble getting to the football club due to restricted access on Swinbrook Park and Kilkenny Lane due to bollards being in place. This has caused issues in the past for ambulances when called as well, and it's because not everyone knows the area well. The fire engine stopped on Kilkenny Lane and two firemen jumped out. One used a mobile water tank to douse the remaining smouldering embers while the fire engine navigated its way round Carterton to get to Carterton Football Club. When the fire engine got to Carterton Football Club, the firemen doused the rest of the area with their hose, and the children there who helped got a chance to have a go with the hose, which was lovely to see. Thames Valley Police said officers had been made aware of the fire, but that no arrests had been made. A spokesman said officers are investigating a fire at a field next to Carterton Football Club. The fire was put out by members of the public. Those who reported it believed it was started deliberately. We ask anyone with information to call 101, quoting reference 43250 433569. Inquiries will be ongoing and no arrests have been made. Oxfordshire County Council, responsible for Oxfordshire Fire Service, said firefighters notified the police because of concerns it was started deliberately. A council spokesman said there was a small fire on land adjacent to Carterton Football Club off Swinbrook Road in Carterton. One crew from Burford attended the incident. Thames Valley Police were informed as there were concerns it had been started deliberately. The crew was called at 1:52 p.m. and left an hour later at 2:50 p.m. on Sunday, August the 24th.
And that was the last item for this week. Please note there is now a new telephone number for you to ring if you have any comments about this week's Oxtalk edition. Please ring 07496 062 280 and leave your name and contact details, as well as your message. Alternatively, you can email mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and previous editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen or download. Thank you very much for listening.